and welcome back to the Loyal Sons podcast presented by Capel Faithful. That's at Capel Faithful on Twitter. Follow us there and follow us here wherever you listen to your podcasts. The Loyal Sons, a safe, sunshiny place for your Pitt athletics fix. Today is Thursday, October 14th, and your Pitt Panthers are still 4-1, but we didn't lose this weekend, which is pretty sweet. We had a nice, relaxing weekend. We're able to enjoy one of the craziest college football Saturdays, I think, in recent memory. What is your guys' takeaway from this weekend of college football?
Was it that crazy of a weekend of college football, or were we just finally able to watch some games that weren't Pitt games?
I think this year, maybe.
I think this past week was especially good, and I think that because I managed to lose almost all of my bets and still enjoy the games that I was watching. Like, I was all over Texas, I bet on Penn State, and despite those bets losing, oh yeah, and I was on Alabama. So yeah, all those bets.
I lost money on both of those games.
I lost all those, lost a bunch of money, but I was still so excited about watching those games. They were so thrilling to the end, I didn't even care.
You are so mush.
Oh, absolutely. I made Alabama lose.
I was on Oklahoma, Red River rivalry. Red River rivalry.
I'm shocked that you took another attempt at those words together after last week.
That was my attempt at redemption. Didn't work. But the Red River shootout, that was one of the best college football games I've watched in a very long time. I was on Oklahoma. Great end of the game cover with the long touchdown run, and maybe the end of the Spencer Rattler era at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm surprised he's in the portal already.
Yeah, I kind of hope so. Ever since I saw a couple clips of him from QB1, I wanted nothing good to happen to that man.
I'm also all in on Caleb Williams to step in that game as a true freshman. Didn't play his senior year because of COVID. And then just steps in and lights it up against Texas, nationally televised game, biggest game of the weekend. That was sweet. So, yeah, I'm all in on him.
Yeah, talk about stepping into a tight spot.
And I don't know, maybe next year, do we see a Pitt Panther QB, Spencer Rattler?
He's not beating out Patty.
No.
You're right. A little too much competition here.
I don't think I want that personality in my locker room. I saw a lot of people tweeting about, like, wow, this Oklahoma team just kind of feels different when not Spencer Rattler's leading them. Like, it looks like they want their quarterback to succeed, which is hilarious to be able to, like, watch a football game and pick up on. That's how much of a prick Spencer Rattler is, I guess.
He just wasn't doing what everyone was expecting him to do. Everyone thought he was even the next Johnny Manziel, but he wasn't. Extending plays. Every time he'd try to scramble or step in the pocket, he would get hit and fumble or throw a bad pass. So he wasn't bringing the it factor that people expected. So, I don't know. There goes his Heisman odds. Pickett's moving up on those draft boards as well.
That's true.
I think this is the last week we'll see Rattler ahead of Pickett on the mock drafts.
One man's abject trash is another man's treasure, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What other games do we watch?
I got to watch some of Tennessee. They absolutely throttled South Carolina. They might be a better team than people anticipated. That win's looking better and better. We actually turned off the Ole Miss-Arkansas game like a few minutes before. I don't know why the game got taken off the TV, so I missed that almost game winner at the end.
We only had one TV where we were at watching these games, but we were like on the remote like crazy going back and forth between Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Texas, Oklahoma, because they were kind of winding down at the same time, so it was just nonstop action.
What about you, David? How did your viewing experience go?
Yeah, Sorgel's Orchard didn't have any TVs. That might be a surprise to you.
So you weren't streaming on your phone from the pumpkin patch?
For a second, I got yelled at, but... I didn't get to see Kennedy Brooks, you know, rip off the game winner. I was, you know, in line for fried Oreos. The Arkansas failed 2-point conversion happened, I believe, while I was looking for the best pumpkin roll in the market. But yeah, no, great weekend. Really, really relaxing. Someone else talk before I cry.
Did he get back in time to watch the Iowa Penn State game?
All right, moving on.
Okay, well, let's not move on from Penn State losing that quickly.
Absolutely.
Let's just cherish that for a second.
Yeah.
Feels good.
Feels great.
All right. On to the ACC.
On to the ACC, indeed. So a full slate of ACC football. Things opened up in the Coastal a little bit for Pitt this weekend, didn't it?
Yeah. You know, teams keep beating up on each other. And it's really setting up this week to be, you know, a game with huge Coastal implications. But just about everyone has two losses except for us and Virginia Tech. Am I right on that?
Correct. Emphasis on teams beating up on each other. Braxton Burmeister barely came out of that Notre Dame game alive. It was kind of impressive that he stayed in and played as well as he did. It looks like he's going to play this week. But also, Miami lost Derek King for the rest of the year. They lost their center for the rest of the year. They are dropping like flies. They do not look good. So the Coastal up for grabs more than ever.
Which is always when it's at its scariest. Makes me a little bit worried for when Pitt starts getting into the thick of their ACC schedule. That's a lot of room for chaos in a conference that is prone to it.
Yeah, anything can happen on any given week, but the stat that scared me the most was whenever I saw a tweet that said if Pitt were to beat Virginia Tech this week, they would have a 2-game lead in the Coastal over every team except Miami. And like I just said, Miami lost their quarterback and center, so they're not a threat to win the Coastal. I think we can all agree on that, as crazy as this conference is. So that makes this week even bigger than before.
So, Derek King, have we seen the last of him?
Yeah, I don't know. Does he go and get an injury waiver? Does he try to go to the NFL next year? I don't know how much the NFL is really looking forward to seeing him. So, can he come back? I don't know.
I don't think so, because he used a red shirt whenever he opted out from Houston that 1 year. I think that covers.
Is there any chance he can get a medical waiver, kind of like Petrushin and Tipton have for a seventh year?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't think the NFL is in need of his services at the moment, so I imagine the transfer portal might be explored. There was a tweet quoting Manny Diaz that said he opted to take a surgery, and he quote tweeted it and, you know, said opted with a question mark, which indicates that he, you know, there's where there's smoke, there's fire there. He does not seem pleased with what his coach said. Maybe Manny Diaz views it as, you know, him quitting on the team. And there's some, I don't know, if a player is willing to say something on Twitter in college football, that's, to me, indicative of something.
I saw that too. And whenever he said opted for the surgery, it made me think that Manny Diaz thought maybe he'd come back with a couple weeks left in the season. But at that point, the season's already over because Miami's going to be, what, like 6-6 this year, 7 wins. What's the point? Why would Derek King quit on his team? This is probably his last hurrah. If he gets the surgery, his NFL dreams are over. So,
I mean, Manny Diaz is just a weird little dude.
Yeah, I'm not going to start with Manny Diaz in any situation, especially this one. I think he's just in the wrong period.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what he cares. It's not like he's going to be coaching the team next year and not Lane Kiffin or, you know, someone else.
I don't know. Miami job doesn't look too hot right now.
That would be interesting. They will get a fairly big name, but I would be interested to see, like, how many candidates they have to go through. How many people would tell them now that Miami is just too toxic?
Well, Mario Cristobal is the guy who they would really want. He's a Miami alum, but he's at Oregon and has a good thing going there, so I don't think that makes sense to leave Oregon for Miami, especially now.
I get alumni ties are strong, but you'd have to be out of your mind to leave Oregon for Miami right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Miami has been on the decline ever since Pitt beat them in that upset a couple years ago. So Pitt broke Miami. Haha.
So one game this week hit a little closer to home. Our upcoming opponent, Virginia Tech, lost by a field goal to number 14 Notre Dame. John alluded to earlier that Braxton Burmeister left the game shaken up and with an injury to his right shoulder. It sounds like he'll play, but more importantly, we didn't get the result that we wanted, which is a emotional Virginia Tech win where they got beat up. but we did get an emotional Virginia Tech loss where they got beat up, and that kind of feels lateral to me.
Yeah, I think part of wanting them to win last week was, you know, the potential of maybe Virginia Tech hopping into the rankings. Virginia looks a little bit better for the ACC, but I don't know. That might be a deflating loss for them. It was a game they very much had the ability to win. They were in it. They looked like they were going to win it, and fooled it late. And then also, number four, Holyfield got kicked out with the targeting call late, so he'll miss the first half next week. So that's a nice little addition. So they got beat up, they lost the guy for a half, and they ultimately lost the heartbreaker. So
I'm still not sold on Burmeister being out. Today, Justin Fuente said that everything looks good and we're anticipating him to play, or some coach speak along those lines. But the Vegas line jumped from Pitt. It was about -1, depending on where you look, a couple of days ago, and now it's up to like Pitt -6. So that implied that Burmeister was out, or they were worried about him being out.
Someone knows something. Vegas always knows better than us, and better than what the coaches will let on. So
the end of that game, Burmeister came back in, and he was throwing the ball around the field. It wasn't like his arm was shot and he couldn't throw the ball more than like 5 yards down the field. He took some deep throws. He was capable of making those throws. But after he ran that touchdown, he got shoved to the ground and landed on it, and he looked like he got shot. He was clearly in pain, and I thought maybe this is like Pickett against Boston College last year. In the moment, you can tough it up, you can play through the pain, but that next day it's too much, and maybe it's worse, he needs surgery or whatever. But I don't know. Either way, he's beat up, and this Pitt defense should push him around a little more, make it hard on him.
Maybe the line moved because the good betters of America saw the offensive juggernaut of the nation going up against a team that hasn't really looked all that impressive yet, especially from an offensive perspective. I mean, they've only broken 30 against Middle Tennessee State University, so this isn't exactly the high-octane offense out of Virginia Tech that might give the Pitt team that we are watching this year issues.
Without Burmeister, that makes them even less dynamic on offense. Hopefully the defense for Pitt can come in and just kind of lock things down, but that just kind of scares me a little bit. You know, third-string quarterback comes out of nowhere, throws the ball all around on Pitt. What could be more Pitt than that?
I know. I saw a lot of people saying that today, and I was like, come on. We just saw some bad backup quarterbacks play. We saw that Taquan Robertson for Penn State play, and he just looked horrible. I thought maybe
absolute pile.
He looked like a high schooler out there playing against like the Pittsburgh Steelers. He could not complete a pass. And I thought maybe Virginia Tech will have someone prepared, third string quarterback, because their backup looks like he blew out his knee in that game as well. So they'd be down to their third string quarterback. So either way, Burmeister didn't blow anyone away that last game either. I think he was like 15 for 30 with 200 yards.
He hasn't blown anyone away this season.
He scares me as he can run a little bit, and he can make throws. Yeah. So I'm not going to take him lightly by any means, but a banged up Burmeister makes this game even more winnable on paper.
And for our next segment, we're going to do a little Christmas in October. That's right, we're going to give you our wish list for this Pitt football season. Better than any holiday season. Seeing all the FPI and S&P rankings, ranking Pitt so high, giving us this hope that maybe Pitt can make the playoff. With things looking so hopeful and so cheery, we decided to give you our list of 10 things that we would like to see for this Pitt football season. David, why don't you get us started?
Well, you know, obviously my Christmas list for Pitt couldn't, you know, be capped. There's so many things, you know, we hope for, but I'm not being a greedy little boy this Christmas. So we you know, clamped it down a little bit, and we chose 10, and we didn't want to go for the obvious ones. Like, if Pitt won the national championship, I would probably drown myself in the Allegheny out of joy. Like, you know, everybody wants Kenny to win the Heisman or us to win the ACC, so we decided to get a little bit specific. The first thing, however, on our Christmas list is beat Virginia Tech.
Please win.
Please win.
Just win. That's all we want.
It's the biggest one because it's the next one.
Yeah, we're going real football guy on you this week and telling you that the only thing we care about is the opponent in front of us. But before we can get, you know, wonderful and hopeful and really get into the Christmas season, I think we just need to take care of business in Blacksburg.
Justin Fuente gets cool.
John, what about you?
Number two, like David said, we're not being greedy. We are going to say we want Pickett in New York City for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. Would I love to see him win it? Yes. Is that a possibility? Yes. But I just want to see him there. I know a lot of this comes down to being the best quarterback on the best team or all that team success. That might hold Pickett back a little bit. But seeing him there on national TV, just being profiled like we always knew he should, would make my year.
That would be massive for the Pitt football program to have a guy in New York for the ceremony. That'd be huge for recruiting, for national reputation.
Poaching someone for
the starting quarterback job next year? Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't talk about Nick Patty's job like that.
Don't count out Nick just yet.
I'm saying after the Patty years.
I hear you. Maybe we do go and grab a guy after that, and that's a hell of a way to attract the kid to come here. Pitt quarterback comes out, puts out crazy numbers, falls in the footsteps of Kenny Pickett.
What more can you ask for?
5 stars incoming. I can see it. Number three. Once again, we're not wishing for much. We're not asking for a lot. But we got one vote in the AP poll last week. I'm not mad about it. Not mad at all. Not bitter against the local writer who didn't put Pitt in. But we just want to be ranked at literally any point of this season. And I think winning this next game, we should, but please, I just want to be ranked. Have a number next to our name when it goes across the ticker.
All I want to see is that little tiny number icon in front of Pitt's name. That's all I've been praying for.
We said we weren't going to be greedy, but I might get a little greedy here. I'd love to be ranked for more than just 1 week. I think in the past, it's like, hey, we're number 23. We lost. Let's hang around in there for a while. Why not get comfortable in the top 25?
Celebrating a win as a ranked team, I imagine, feels much different.
Yeah, because then you can see how much you jumped up in the rankings the next week.
Can you imagine us all huddled around our computers at 3 p.m. on Sunday, waiting for Pitt to go from 24 to 21?
And then I would lose my mind about whoever's 20th and 19th and 18th. Yes, I cannot wait for that.
Oh, whoever those teams are, they couldn't hold Pitt's jock.
Absolutely not.
Number four, sell out a home game. Again, I think we're being as reasonable as possible, and I think that we have a sincere opportunity to do this against Clemson in that primetime game, that 3:30 slot on either ABC or ESPN. It was announced on Monday. I want to see a packed Heinz Field. Get people feeling good about the program, having fun at games, wanting to come back and see this team again.
Yeah, the opening home schedule this year was pretty weak. We had UMass. No one's getting out of bed to watch UMass at noon.
Except us.
Except us.
At 7 a.m.
Then Western Michigan came to town. Not talking Next. About that. Blood and then New Hampshire. Yeah, why would anybody go to that game? There are many reasons to not go to that game. But the next one is one of the biggest ones to come to Heinz Field in a long time. So
I'm hoping the brand recognition, the name brand of Clemson, even though they're down this year, can bring a good amount of fans. I'm hoping that they bring some fans up.
Not too much orange, though.
Not too much orange, but, you know, only time they'll play in Pittsburgh for the foreseeable future. So hopefully that gets some fans up here. And I've already talked to a few people, you know, friends and, you know, family members who are more casual Pitt fans, or maybe not even Pitt fans at all, who said, you know, they're looking forward to coming down. They want to go to the Clemson game because they want to see, you know, big time matchup.
This is the kind of shit that brings the layman out, you know, the people who aren't deep in the world of Pitt football. That you go home and you're talking to your roommates or your spouse or, you know, your family, and you say, like, yeah, Clemson's coming into town and Pitt's actually supposed to, like, play with them. That intrigues people who would not otherwise come to Pitt games.
Yeah, big game. We'll either be on ABC or ESPN. 3:30, great time. Great time to come down and tailgate for a few hours, get into the game, and still have a night after. So hope to see them fill up for that one.
But 1 week at a time, Virginia Tech's
please just beat Virginia Tech.
Please, dear God, beat Virginia Tech.
Next on our list is something we want for a number of reasons, and that is a defensive player on the first team All-ACC list. Right now, it doesn't look like it. David Hale and a couple of the guys have done, like, midway point predictions, and we didn't have anyone on the first team. Kind of surprising, given our track record of incredible defensive
pedigree, yeah.
But I think it's very possible. We have a couple guys on the cusp, and if they take a leap over the next couple of weeks, they could get in that conversation.
I agree, and I think that'd be really indicative of, you know, if some guys were able to get more attention in the back half of the year, I think that'd be really indicative of our defense taking a step forward collectively. They haven't been terrible thus far, but there's obviously been some points that have been worrying, and it, you know, if you ask me, Kalijah Cansey and Servacier Dennis are two guys who should appear on a list like this. And, you know, the fact that they haven't, you know, thus far entered those kind of conversations, to me, says something not phenomenal about Pitt's defense, and I'd like to see that turned around.
I think Haba Baldonado is a guy who could potentially crack that. He looks really good as a pass rusher right now. Has a chance to maybe put up, you know, double-digit sack numbers, and that's something that will maybe get you a look on that first-team All-ACC list.
Yeah, those guys you mentioned should definitely be close to that. And I think Damari Mathis is another sleeper. He already has a pick six. Hopefully he can step up down the stretch because we're going to be playing some teams that like to throw the ball a lot.
Don't sleep on John Patrician. That old man has showed out this year.
He sure has. Not many guys. I'd be interested to see the list across the country of seventh-year guys and if any have been more productive than he has. Number six. Some more postseason award talk. We want to see Jordan Addison be a Biletnikoff finalist. Let him be in that conversation for a top three receiver in the country. And he's well on his way, if you ask me. He's been, obviously, we talked about earlier, haven't got to watch a ton of other college football games this year because all of our energy goes to Pitt. But Addison, statistically and just overall performance level, has to be in that conversation as the top guy.
He's at a crazy pace. He is getting a lot of touchdowns, and will it slow down? I hope not, but I don't see why it wouldn't. This offense is clicking.
Teams can't cover him. He's been giving everybody we've played this year fits. Number seven, let's get a Pickett shotgun celebration on national TV.
Oh, I'd love it. That it went viral the first time around, but with Pickett's growing popularity, shooting up draft boards, shooting up Heisman watch lists, I can just see it now. Throwing a touchdown against Virginia Tech this week, walks right over to Lucas Kroll, shotgun celebration, spike the beer in the end zone.
Yeah, I don't think Pickett has done it since Jimmy Morrissey has left. I know that's been his partner in crime, but bring it back with Kroll. No better candidate. Imagine the buzz. That would damn near be a Heisman moment. Just think about all the like Barstool accounts and all those accounts tweeting out. That would get so many likes, so many shares.
How great would it be if Pickett's Heisman moment was just him shotgunning a beer as a celebration?
Not only is this guy good, he is so cool.
Desmond Howard's was like a 90-yard punt return touchdown against his biggest rival, but Kenny Pickett's is drinking a fake beer against Virginia Tech. I'll take it.
Clemson, Virginia Tech, maybe UNC Thursday night nationally televised game. Maybe we just get a few, like, honestly, maybe you should just start doing it after every touchdown.
Yeah, I want Pitt to increase their Twitter impressions, as long as Owen Drexel doesn't get in it, because he doesn't deserve it. But I love it. I know a couple of our friends bought that Friday Beers t-shirt.
I bought two of them. A black one and a white one, long sleeve and short sleeve.
Side note, who do you guys think on the Pitt football team can drink the most beer? I'm leaning Kroll. That's kind of why I picked him.
I don't know if I can realistically combat that.
I mean, he's massive.
I feel like if he wanted to, Devin Danielson could throw him back. He looks like a big country boy who would sit around a fire and crush a case without, like, batting an eye.
Now, if we're talking about knocking down a couple bottles of wine, I'll take Haba Baldonado.
Him and Narduzzi just knock down some wine.
Swirling around a nice red blend.
On to the next. This one, after this past week, is looking a little bit more promising. Finish higher than Penn State. We did it last year, but COVID year, whatever, blah, blah, blah. People don't think it counts. It counts. We're going to finish out of Penn State again after they just lost to Iowa and they potentially lost Sean Clifford for a couple of weeks. Very possible. Let's do it.
I don't know how long Clifford will be out, if this will be an extended issue, but if they're trotting out to Quan Roberson, they're in trouble.
And the teeth of their schedule is coming up. Michigan State, Ohio State. I think they play Michigan as well. It ain't easy.
No, that could be a quarterback. That could be three losses off the cuff.
Yeah. Without Clifford, they're in trouble. So,
not that he's been a world beater this year.
Right. But the rest of the team is good enough and he's competent enough. Whereas, I mean, they couldn't do anything once he went out of the game last week. Number 9, Lucas Kroll, former Division I SEC pitcher, played baseball. We want to see him use that rocket launcher of an arm and throw a touchdown pass on a trick play. And we want it to go to Pickett. We want Kenny Pickett to catch his second career receiving touchdown, and we want it to be coming from Lucas Kroll.
If you're listening to this, Mark Whipple, draw it up.
I'd love nothing more than them to run a throwback and Kroll to just launch that baby 70 yards.
I imagine it like Friday Night Lights, the movie version, where Mike Winchell lays out at the goal line and makes an amazing catch, like Larry Fitzgerald-esque. That could be a real Heisman moment for Pickett. What other quarterbacks are making diving touchdown catches?
He catches the touchdown, then him and Kroll run the midfield and then shotgun the beers.
There we go. We just bought two of our presents at once there. But I don't know. I'm a little bit worried to put Pickett in the line of fire. I'm not afraid of him getting hit. He's tough. But look at Lucas Kroll. You tell me that frame can't break a couple of Pickett's fingers if he puts full velocity behind it.
That's why he wears the gloves. He's always ready.
A little Kenny toe tap in the end zone.
And number 10. Please go to a bowl game in a cool location. Do not make us go to Detroit. Do not make us go to Boise, Idaho.
Don't make us go to Annapolis again.
Or Birmingham.
Give us somewhere tropical, somewhere metropolitan, where we can eat good food and stand at a beach and also be the national championship.
Yeah, Indianapolis. We'll take Indianapolis in January. Or, you know, the Peach Bowl in Atlanta doesn't sound half bad either.
Orange Bowl in Miami, I'd buy a ticket. Don't twist my arm to go to that one.
Please, Narduzzi Claus. We have been such good boys this year, and for the past 20 years of watching Pitt being a middling program.
And we don't want to go back to El Paso for the Sun Bowl and play against Oregon State.
I saw that prediction today, and I thought it was a sick joke.
Bad memories. Bad things happen in El Paso. Let's stay away from there.
Three formation, and that'll do it. Iowa! 23!
This week, we welcome on to the podcast Mike McDaniels, writer for Sons of Saturday and podcast host for Basketball Conference, Hokie Hangover, the Sons of Saturday podcast, and Locks of Saturday. Mike, you will be representing the Virginia Tech Hokies this week on our podcast. How are you feeling about that?
Depends on the week, boys. It depends on the week.
Well, we feel that. So, I'm assuming this week is one of those rougher weeks. Last Saturday, Virginia Tech lost a nail biter against the Fighting Irish, and Pitt fans were hoping for a physically and emotionally brutal game, win or lose for Virginia Tech. Did we get what we wished?
You did, yeah. I mean, Braxton Burmeister, the starting quarterback, is pretty banged up. Pretty banged up. Now, Virginia Tech's quarterback situation is, we'll call it tentative. Like it's not good, right? Like Tech had 3 4-star quarterbacks in the room last year. They had Braxton Burmeister, they had Hendon Hooker, who's now tearing it up at Tennessee, and they had Quincy Patterson, who's now tearing it up at North Dakota State. So you had 2 guys transfer out of the program. You're left with Burmeister, who throughout his career, like if you follow kind of his career arc, he started his career. He's a 4-star quarterback from La Jolla, California. So he's from sunny San Diego, right? He goes to Oregon and he rides the bench at Oregon. He gets some limited playing time, but he was pretty banged up there. And then he transfers to Virginia Tech and you're dealing with the same thing here, right? Now he was sitting behind Hendon Hooker. Going into last year, there were folks who were saying that, you know, Hooker was getting pushed by Burmeister in camp, but everybody caught COVID. So he was never able to actually fully win the starting job. But, you know, you saw the glimpses of Burmeister. He started the year for Virginia Tech a year ago because Hooker was out. Hooker came back because Burmeister broke 3 of his toes on his foot because he had an offensive lineman step on him in practice. So
love to see that. Like,
First you're dealing with COVID, then you're dealing with offensive linemen stepping on your foot in practice. Just not ideal, right? And then he came back at the end of the year and he was fully healthy, you know, recovered from COVID, recovered from the foot injury, and played pretty well. Now this year it's been very up and down. His statistics aren't very good. Throwing the football, choose your own adventure. I mean, sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's really awful. But he's a really athletic kid. He's one of the fastest players on the team, which is – you know, something for, you know, a white quarterback from La Jolla. I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, Virginia Tech's got 4-star athletes they've recruited all over the field on offense and defense, but Burmeister is just, he's an electric runner. The issue is that if he gets hurt, as we saw this past Saturday against Notre Dame, if Burmeister gets hurt, Tech's in a lot of trouble. They had Connor Blumrick, who is a backup quarterback from Texas A&M, who came into the game. And I mean, Blumrick wasn't even playing quarterback at A&M, you know, a year ago. He was playing tight end and H-back, you know, because he didn't win the starting quarterback job because they had Kellen Mond there, of course. So he comes to Virginia Tech for an opportunity to play quarterback. He comes in the game and he suffers a knee injury in the third quarter. So he's out for a significant period of time. So now Virginia Tech, all they got on their roster behind Burmeister is the low 3-star quarterback who was originally committed to James Madison. His name's Knox Kadum. And then a true freshman high 3-star quarterback from New Jersey named Taj Bullock, but Bullock's been playing on the practice squad all year. So like he's nowhere close to being ready. So Burmeister was popping pills on the sideline because he had dead arm against Notre Dame. So there was a joke going around social media because he was popping pills on the sideline and ACC Network caught it. They're calling him Braxton Perkmeister because everybody was making jokes to give him Percocet, which is hysterical. So he's not 100%. That's the long and short of it. And if he gets knocked out of the game, Virginia Tech's in a world of trouble, not only against Pitt, but against pretty much anyone else for late, just kind of remaining on the schedule. It's not going to be good.
Yeah, so what you're saying is we should take a couple cheap shots at Burmeister early and it'll be well worth the 15-yard penalties.
It would be because Tech's got nobody behind him.
So what is the word on the street as far as Burmeister's condition? Because Justin Fuente came out early in the week and said he'd be ready to roll against Pitt. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah. So I was on that press conference on Monday when Fuente said, yeah, he was good to go. The message boards were pretty wild over the weekend because, you know, a couple different message boards said Burmeister was out for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. Meanwhile, you know, Blumrick was going to be out for the year. Neither one of those ended up being true. Blumrick is out for a significant period of time, but Braxton Burmeister is only going to end up being out for what everybody thought was 4 to 6 weeks, ends up being nothing, right? So he's going to be able to come out and play on Saturday. To what extent he's going to be healthy is a whole nother question, though. I'm not really sure.
I'm shocked the message boards were wide of the mark on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a shock. If you were listening to the message boards, Justin Fuente was already fired and Virginia Tech hired Tony Elliott last December. So, I mean, we're all over the map. We're all over the map on the message boards.
Well, we're familiar.
Yeah. Yeah.
So before we dive into this week's match a little bit more, we ask all of our guests what their honest thoughts are on the Pitt football program. So don't hold back. Be honest. We can handle it. What do you think of Pitt football?
I hate Pat Narduzzi, man. Like, I can't stand him. Now, I will say that I will say that I do like Kenny Pickett. I like Kenny Pickett. I really enjoy watching him play, mostly because of that Miami game like 15 years ago, you know, when he knocks Miami off the pedestal as a freshman. That game feels like it was two decades ago. But I was a big Kenny Pickett fan and have been ever since that happened, because I hate Miami too. So I do appreciate that about Kenny Pickett. Been really impressed with him. You know, when I look at Pitt, the one thing that you can always count on is, at least in the last few years since Allison and Hall left, it's, you know, we have 15,000 running backs, but none of them can really run the ball. So it's basically Kenny Pickett or bust, it seems like. And most years it's like a 50-50 proposition. This year, though, Pickett is the best quarterback in the ACC. I mean, he's been phenomenal.
Yeah, I bet you're really excited Quadri Olison isn't suiting up this Saturday after what he failed fairly.
Yes. No, I am very happy he's not suiting up anymore. Virginia Tech has enough issues trying to stop the run. I'm glad I don't have to watch Tech face Olison or Hall for that matter.
So that kind of brings me to my next question. Are you guys good? Like, I'm asking genuinely. I cannot looking at box scores, you know, you've played some tight games against good teams. You've played some tight games against bad teams. Are you good?
Depends on the week. You know, it's kind of been the case for the last few years with Justin Fuente and Virginia Tech, to be honest with you. It's been kind of like a very week-to-week thing. I think Virginia Tech has the capability of being very good. I mean, if you look at the opener against North Carolina at Lane, you know, Virginia Tech's defense showed up. They made Sam Howell run for his life. You know, defense played really well. Offense did enough to win the game. And then you look at the game like Richmond, where it's like 21-7 or whatever it was. And it's just like, man, this is – you got to be beating an FCS team by more than 14 points. So it's very week to week. I will say this. Virginia Tech is totally incapable of playing a complete four-quarter game right now. They just haven't done – they didn't even do it in the North Carolina game, to be honest with you. You know, Virginia Tech played a really good offensive first half and then went to sleep in the second half offensively, but the defense was really good and it helped Tech kind of pull through in that game. And then this past weekend against Notre Dame, it was probably the closest Virginia Tech's come, to be quite honest with you, to having a complete game, like offensively and defensively. But, you know, last 4 minutes, the defense kind of went to sleep and Notre Dame scores a touchdown, a 2-point conversion, forces a 3-and-out, and then goes right up the field to kick a game-winning field goal. So Virginia Tech still has not played a complete four-quarter game yet this year.
So we were able to watch a few Virginia Tech games this year. We saw the early game against UNC that you mentioned and caught the end of the Notre Dame game last week. As somebody who watches Virginia Tech religiously, who should we watch out for? Who should we be afraid of?
So it's very – offensively, it's very dependent on the week. I will say that Virginia Tech's got some talent at receiver. Tech's best weapon was tight end James Mitchell, but, you know, he blew out his knee against Richmond. So he's out for the year. Yeah, so he's – you don't have to face an all-ACC tight end, so you do have that going for you, right? Offensively, it's really Trey Turner and Tavion Robinson. Those are Tech's top two receivers. Virginia Tech's coaching staff likes to talk about how they have a lot of depth at receiver, but they really only play like three guys consistently. So Trey Turner and Tavion Robinson are the two receivers that are definite, you know, big play threats at times. Virginia Tech's most versatile player on offense outside of Braxton Burmeister is Raheem Blackshear. He's listed as a running back, but he lines up everywhere. He lines up in the slot. He lines up at running back. He's a kick returner. He does a little bit of everything. He was very good at Rutgers before transferring to Virginia Tech, which, as you boys know, is an accomplishment in and of itself to be a standout player on Rutgers, a terrible football team. They've been a little bit better, so I don't want to totally shit on them.
Are you talking shit on Art Sitowski right now?
Yeah, Art Sitowski, yeah. Yeah, the people's champ, Art Sitowski, who's now playing at Illinois, which tells you everything you need to know.
gotta love Big Ten quarterback play.
It's something. Raheem Blackshear is Virginia Tech's most versatile player. Tavion Robinson, probably Virginia Tech's best receiver. Trey Turner is the number one receiver, but Tavion Robinson has been a bit more consistent week over week. He plays out of the slot. Trey Turner is more of an outside guy. Defensively, I mean, it's defensive back Jermaine Waller. He's an all-ACC player. He's been outstanding this year. He's tied for the lead nationally, I believe, with four interceptions. Had a pick six against Notre Dame, which I thought changed the game, but apparently it didn't. But he's been really good. He was an all-ACC player a couple of years ago, battled some injuries last year. Then he caught the entire team had COVID. So he caught COVID and he was battling a foot injury, but he's been back. He's been really good. He's a potential first or second round pick in the NFL draft. He is Virginia Tech's best player, in my opinion, on the defensive side of the football, maybe on the entire team, to be quite honest with you. He's been really, really good. Virginia Tech's middle linebacker, Dax Holyfield, he's going to be missing the first half of this game because he got called for targeting. It was kind of a, I hate targeting so much, but it's kind of a garbage targeting call. But,
we saw it and we were rooting for the targeting for a change.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, in the stands, they showed the replay on the big screen. I literally couldn't believe how bad the call was, but you're missing him in the middle of the defense, which he's been up and down in his career because he played a little bit of outside linebacker, which was not his natural position, kind of out of necessity because he was a good player and they needed him on the field. But now he's at middle linebacker. And when he's in the game in the second half, that should make a difference. Even if he's not playing particularly well, it'll make a difference from like a communication standpoint for Tech's defense. I think Justin Fuente is really worried about that going into this game, not having a signal caller in the middle of the defense for the entire first half. And it's the best quarterback they've faced all year because I think Pickett's playing better than Sam Howell. So really it's Jermaine Waller on defense for sure. And then Amari Barno, I got to mention Amari Barno because he's the most freakishly athletic player on the defense for Virginia Tech. He's only been playing defensive end for last season was the first time he played defensive end. He was an all ACC player last year and he was new to the position. This year, he's not catching teams by surprise. So teams have been, I know Pitt will be paying a lot of attention to him at strong side defensive end. But if you let him have a big day and let him rush Kenny Pickett, that's going to be a problem. It's going to make life easier on Virginia Tech's defensive backs if you allow that to happen. So it's really Amari Barno, Jermaine Waller, and then whatever we get out of Dax Holyfield in the second half on defense.
Okay. So those are the Hokies that we need to worry about, as Pitt fans. But inversely, who or what about the Pitt Panthers scares you as a Virginia Tech fan? Aside from Kenny Pickett, we will give him his shine in a minute. But what are you most worried about heading into Saturday?
I watched the Georgia Tech game a couple weeks back, basically in its entirety. And Georgia Tech's decision to just not defend Addison is just – I can't believe that was a choice that Georgia Tech consciously made in the first half. Not even the first half, the first quarter. Like,
ask you,
unreal.
Can you turn lead into gold? You can't ask people to do impossible tasks. You can't ask Georgia Tech to cover Jordan Addison.
He's really good, man. I mean, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about that. I do like, and I make fun of Pitt's running game a lot, but I like Abanikanda. Am I pronouncing his name right? Did I get it right?
Yes, you are.
Yes. Cool. Just making sure. I thought it was right. I just want to make sure. He's pretty athletic, man. Like, I think he's decent. Now I understand Pitt can't really run the ball, but I think he's a threat back there. Certainly. If he shakes loose. Virginia Tech's had so much trouble tackling running backs lately. That's definitely a concern of mine going into Saturday, even though Pitt hasn't been very good running the ball.
So, yeah. You're not alone. Abanikanda is somebody who liked to run the ball as well. He kind of, had to fight for his touches, but finally he's getting them, and rightfully so, because the guys ahead of him were doing absolutely nothing.
You all got away from the law firm of Davis and Davis, right? I mean, you guys are pretty much like done with that experiment.
Halfway there.
I don't know. I mean, I think Virginia Tech's the biggest concern coming into this game is not being able to get a pass rush on Kenny Pickett, because as good as Virginia Tech's secondary has been, like, if you let a quarterback stand back there and you don't knock him off his spot, you know, Virginia Tech's secondary is capable of getting beat, just like any secondary would be. And I looked at the end of that Notre Dame game, and Jack Cohn. So in the first half, you know, Jack Cohn started the game for Notre Dame. Virginia Tech had a game plan, you know, get a pass rush on him, right? And then they pulled Cohn. They put in the freshman Tyler Buckner, who I think is going to be a pretty good player for Notre Dame in the future. But he made some freshman mistakes, turned the football over a little bit. Brian Kelly then puts Jack Cohn back in the fourth quarter. And it's almost like Virginia Tech didn't readjust to the quarterback they were facing. Like, they were perfectly fine with just, you know, playing, you know, man defense and just, you know, sitting back on a freshman quarterback. But against Jack Cohn, they didn't readjust back to get a pass rush on him. He's a graduate student, you know, and he picked him apart on those last couple drives. So that's my concern. I mean, Kenny Pickett is a veteran quarterback, and, you know, if Virginia Tech doesn't get a consistent pass rush on him, I think it's going to be a pretty long day for the Virginia Tech defense, which is a strength of the team. And the offense has been so up and down for Tech that, like, if they get down a few scores, man, I don't see how Virginia Tech keeps this competitive for very long. Seriously. The defense has to show up and play well, or else Tech's going to be in a world of trouble, I think.
I thought the same thing in that final stretch of the game. I thought if Jack Cohn can do this against Virginia Tech's defense, I feel pretty good about Pickett's chance.
Yeah.
I was licking my chops.
If Kenny Pickett gets going early and Virginia Tech doesn't adjust, like, that's something that is concerning. They didn't adjust against Jack Cohn when he was put back into the game in the fourth quarter. And, That's something I worry about for sure.
So then realistically, what do you think Kenny Pickett's stat line could look like at the end of this game? we ask all of our guests this, all two that we've ever had. We want you to tell us how bad Kenny Pickett is going to tear you apart.
Before you answer that, I'd like to bring up the fact that our friend Robert from Georgia Tech, his prediction for Pickett hit at about halftime. So he was on the under. So
okay. So I think if you get, can I give you two scenarios? Can I give you the good Virginia Tech defense scenario and the second half Jack Cohn defense scenario, right?
By all means.
So, okay. So I think if you get Virginia Tech's performance against Sam Howell, right, where they're rushing for four quarters, making him run for his life, I think Kenny Pickett still gets his yards, right? Because that's the way that Pittsburgh moves the football most consistently. So they're still going to throw it. I think he throws for, like, worst case, like 275, 280, like two touchdowns, two picks or something, right? Now, let's talk about if Virginia Tech plays like they did in the fourth quarter against Jack Cohn. They don't get home to Pickett. You know, they're unable to produce a consistent pass rush. They get beat by, you know, we talked about Jordan Addison, but Shockey Jacques Louis or whoever. I mean, name your receiver, right? Somebody gets loose in the secondary against Virginia Tech. I could see Pickett going for, like, you know, 450 with, like, four or five scores. I mean, it sounds crazy, and I understand Virginia Tech's entire defense had COVID last year, right? But we just saw this happen last November. Like, it's not too far out of the realm of possibility. I mean, Pickett wasn't that good last year, and Tech made him look like a Heisman candidate. So, you know, I could see, I'm sorry, I could see it happening. That's the pessimist in me as a Hokies fan, Hokies alum, you know.
I like that second number a lot.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd rather not, but yeah. I think it's realistic. I mean, seriously, I do think it's realistic that he could throw for, like, four bills and four or five touchdowns.
Okay, so we got your Kenny Pickett prediction. Now, what is your actual game prediction for this year's matchup? In previous years, it's been a blowout. Either way, home team wins by a lot. Do you see that trend continuing?
It's interesting because if you look at it just throughout Justin Fuente's tenure at Virginia Tech, Narduzzi has never beaten Fuente at Lane Stadium. Now, he's been close. He's been close a few times. I was at that 2019 game 2 years ago in the rain.
So were we, unfortunately.
Oh, well, yeah. I'm sorry that you made the trip for that, because that was – I couldn't believe how poorly Pitt played. I mean, I was very surprised with how poorly Pitt played in that game. Yeah, that was – I was very happy leaving the stadium, but I came away very surprised just from a neutral standpoint at how poorly Pitt played. I think that Virginia Tech will play well at home because they have been playing well at home this year against better competition. I mean, Middle Tennessee State and Richmond, it's like, how do you get up for Middle Tennessee after playing UNC? How do you get up for Richmond after playing West Virginia? It's one of those deals. I'm glad we all are in agreement that it's awesome to see West Virginia lose to Baylor by 1,000 points and just struggle through the big 12 play. Yeah, it's the greatest. I think Pittsburgh wins because my whole thing is like, I don't think Braxton Burmeister is that healthy. Like, I just don't. Now, he was throwing at practice and, you know, Fuente says he'll play or full go or whatever. I don't see it happening, guys, from Virginia Tech's offense. And Pickett's been so hot. And I get you can look at, you know, some of the competitions, you know, Pitt has played, and you look at like the Western Michigan game, you're like, how the hell did that happen? Like, Pitt is perfectly capable, just like Virginia Tech. Pitt is perfectly capable at a given moment laying an absolute egg, right? But going to Lane Stadium, you know, being able to Pitt's coming off a bye week, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, Pitt's coming off a bye week. Tech just had an emotional loss at home to Notre Dame. Like, I think Tech will come into this game motivated. I just don't think they're healthy enough at quarterback. And the offense has just been so inconsistent moving the football. I think Pittsburgh wins. I'm going to go, I think Pitt wins close, though. I'm not sure they cover. I think it spreads up to like 5, 5.5, maybe more today. I'm not sure. But I think Pitt wins close, maybe like 27-24 or something like that. Maybe that's too high scoring, but I just have a hard time seeing Virginia Tech's defense keep Pittsburgh down for 4 quarters with the way that Kenny Pickett has been playing.
While I don't like you mushing us like that, you know, doing a verbal mush on Pitt, which is exactly what you're up to, I can see it. I do appreciate you knowing that you are facing college football's offensive juggernaut. but what I did want to ask, and will you be in attendance at the game?
I actually won't be. Thought about it. I will not be in attendance now.
Okay. Well, I think it sounds like fun. I didn't get to make the trip last time. I've always wanted to see Virginia Tech come out to enter Sandman because I've seen it's electric. So my question to you is, how many times have you heard Enter Sandman in your life?
1,000? Like, a lot. It's really funny. It's really funny now because, like, anytime it pops up on a playlist or, you know, I'm at the gym, it pops up at the gym or whatever. It's just hysterical. It's just like the urge to, as an alum, to actually like stop what I'm doing and start jumping is like there. It sounds ridiculous, but it's just one of those things.
So I'd be interested in making a little wager to kind of alleviate your ears from having to hear it anymore. If Pitt wins, we get Enter Sandman, and you have to take Sweet Caroline. How about that?
I'm a Boston Red Sox fan, so I'll take Sweet Caroline any day. But I got a better proposition, right? If Virginia Tech wins, you guys can have Enter Sandman. We'll take Kenny Pickett.
Over my dead f***ing body.
You guys can have Perkmeister. It'll be fine.
Don't even joke about that. Don't even joke about taking Kenny Pickett away from us. That's all we have.
All right. Well, we need to cut it here before this gets contentious and out of hand. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. It was incredibly insightful. I do think that you did just reverse jinx Pitt, so I'm very worried about the outcome on Saturday, but we appreciate all the insight.
I was going for the reverse jinx, and I'm more than happy to join you guys anytime. Appreciate you having me on.
Again, thank you so much.
How about this? First play of the drive, Olesen. Quadri Olesen running over Caleb Farley. Olesen with a house call. You've got to be kidding.
Does a heck of a job. And I mentioned earlier, Farley was the 100-meter champion in the state of North Carolina in high school, and he didn't bring enough rocks in his pocket to that party not to handle big Quadri Olesen.
Well, if you stuck around this long, you've got to hear our Christmas wish list for this Pitt football season. You got to hear us talk to our buddy Mike from Blacksburg. And now you get to hear our predictions, what we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, Dill, it's less our predictions and more us telling you what's going to happen as the Pitt Panthers roll into Blacksburg, Virginia. It's a game we've been anticipating for a while. Pat Narduzzi coming off of a bye week. What do we see happening here?
In previous years, this game has been a blowout, one way or the other. One team is going home completely devastated. They got the brakes blown off of them.
More of the same this year? The series hasn't treated road teams very friendly.
That's my hesitation. That's why I say the road team wins for the first time in a while, but it'll be a close one. I'm going to say Pitt wins 38-30.
So you're predicting a tight one?
Yeah. As much as I'd love to say we're going to go down to Blacksburg and blow them out, because I do think we're a better team. That road environment, it's tough. We saw with Tennessee, it took us a while to get going. Hopefully we don't have to deal with that. We play well right off the jump against Georgia Tech, but...
You mean you don't want any blocked punts the first drive?
If we can avoid that.
I'd prefer not.
Picky.
Same Beamer ball, Virginia Tech. I feel pretty good about how the offense is playing right now. You know, Virginia Tech probably one of the tougher defenses we've had to face thus far. They will be missing Holyfield for the first half. Not sure how much that will play into it, but I still think Pitt's going to be able to move the ball, put up some points. I'm going to say 37-23. I just don't think Virginia Tech's offense will be able to keep up, especially with a hampered Burmeister if he does trot out there. You know, I hate to predict a two-score win. Vegas usually knows better than we do, but they also only had Pitt -3 against Georgia Tech a couple weeks
ago. We beat the brakes off of the Yellow Jackets in Atlanta.
So
that one was pretty good for the first minute and a half.
And Georgia Tech might be worse than people thought. They barely squeaked out a win against Duke this past week.
Yeah, Dylan, I actually, the number I had in my head is eerily close to yours. But it's what I feel in my gut, so I'm not going to shy away just to be different. I say 38-24. We give up that one extra point, but then conversely, as an offensive unit, we produce one more than you said. I think this is really Pitt's chance to show us that this is a different team than every other year by going into Blacksburg, breaking a long chain of misery in Lane Stadium. And I think we have too much firepower for them on offense, and I don't think that offensively Virginia Tech has been good enough to really hit us where we know that we have pain points. I'm not afraid of Braxton Burmeister. I am typically afraid of athletic quarterbacks that can run on Pitt, but he is not Hendon Hooker. He is, you know, not De'Arik King. He worries me a little bit less than them. So I think we can beat them by 2 scores. I do think it's still going to be a little bit ugly at points. They aren't going to make this easy for us.
Yeah, I think deep down in my gut, Pitt would score more than 41 against Virginia Tech. And deep down in my gut, I don't think Virginia Tech would put up 30 points against Pitt because I don't think their offense is that dynamic. But I respect the power of Enter Sandman. And that is what swings me to the score that I landed on. I experienced it firsthand, and it was something.
It is an exceptionally tough crowd. But also, if you zoom out on it from a macro level, this just kind of feels like a Pitt letdown loss. So I don't know. All the X's and O's lean in our favor, but have we considered stupid luck?
What I did consider was while I was watching the game, on Saturday, whenever they played Notre Dame, Jack Cohn kind of marched Notre Dame down the field, and I thought, man, if Jack Cohn is doing this, imagine what Pickett's going to do. We're going to score like 55. But I walked back a little bit. I was drunk and had been watching football and was deprived of Pitt football for a long time, so.
You're a little delirious.
That's how it happens, yes.
I'm going to be a nervous wreck come 3:30 on Saturday.
I am right now.
I'll be rooting my heart out in Venice, Florida. Hopefully find a bar. Maybe I'm going to throw on my Pickett jersey and just try to find another Pitt fan to root with me. We'll see how that goes. Thank you for tuning in to the Loyal Sons podcast. Remember, subscribe to us here wherever you listen to your podcast. Also, follow us on Twitter at Capel Faithful. That's at Capel Faithful on Twitter. We'll see you this weekend in Blacksburg as the Pittsburgh Panthers take on the Virginia Tech Hokies at Lane Stadium. Please, please just win. As always, hail, Loyal Sons of Pittsburgh.